I'm your host, Scott Horton. This is the Republic Broadcasting Network. My website is weekendinterviewshow.com. I keep all the archives for you in MP3 format. And today I'm going to be talking with Gordon Prather in the first hour, and in the second hour, Chris Hedges, author of War is a Force That Gives Us Meaning, former reporter for the New York Times. So definitely stick around for that. First up, Dr. Gordon Prather, nuclear physicist and expert on international nuclear proliferation treaties and such things as that. He writes for antiwar.com and also for WorldNet Daily, and he has articles on both of those pages today. Welcome to the show, Gordon.
Thank you, Scott.
It's great to have you back, my friend. And your article today is called Tearing Up the NPT, the Non-Proliferation Treaty. It's up there at antiwar.com. Before we get into the non-proliferation treaty and who's tearing it up, I think we ought to give the audience a bit of a taste for who you are, if they're not familiar, and what sort of credentials do you carry that would qualify you to be talking about the sorts of things we're going to be discussing this hour.
Well, I am by education and training a nuclear physicist. All of my experience as a nuclear physicist was in the nuclear weapons research and development community. I worked first at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, where I participated in proof testing of nuclear weapons. Then I worked at Sandia National Laboratory, where I was a test director, technical director, that's a different animal, on a vulnerability test of our nuclear warheads against presumed Soviet countermeasures. I was an aide to or a legislative assistant to Senator Henry Bellman of Oklahoma during the Carter years. And in addition to advising Bellman on nuclear kinds of things, I was an observer at the SALT talks in
the Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty.
That's right.
That was in the 1980s then?
This was in the late 70s, and it was in the negotiations were for SALT II, which Senator Bellman had a fairly influential role in seeing to it that treaty never was approved by the United States Senate.
That was that was due to your influence or against it?
It was, but Bellman had a role in it. He was a key player in Carter getting the Senate I can't think of the word right offhand, but it's the Senate's required to
Ratify it.
Yeah, ratify it. Right. Okay. Then during the Reagan years, I was chief scientist for the Army. That was mostly budgeting and planning and deciding what we were going to do, and in that role, I was mostly associated with chemical and biological warfare defense rather than nuclear weapons, because the Army by that time essentially had no nuclear weapons. There were very few. There were some on the Patriot, and then we had the demolition munitions. But we were already pretty much, the Army was pretty much out of the nuclear business by the end of the end of the 80s. Then I've been long associated with Senator Pete Domenici of New Mexico in his programs to ensure the peaceful disposition of Soviet nuclear weapons and fissile material. And that's it.
And you spent the intervening years here also studying these treaties, the NPT and the IAEA Accords and all that too, right? Quick.
Quick.
Okay, hang on. We'll be right back, everybody, with Dr. Gordon Prather from antiwar.com.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm talking with Dr. Gordon Prather. He writes for WorldNet Daily and for antiwar.com. And before we get into specifics of what's going on in the news, particularly in regards to American relations with India and technology transfers taking place and that sort of thing, I'd really like for you, Dr. Prather, to go ahead and take us to kindergarten on the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the International Atomic Energy Agency, the Nuclear Suppliers Group, and get us familiar with these terms so that we know what you're talking about when you get to the interesting part.
Okay, back to 1952, when Eisenhower proposed his Atoms for Peace program. Shortly after, there was established the International Atomic Energy Agency. It's essentially a UN agency. And practically every nation state on the planet is a member. At the moment, I think the only state that isn't is North Korea, which withdrew a couple of years ago. It was a member, but it isn't anymore. Okay. Everybody else is a member of the IAEA. And what the IAEA was charged with, among other things, was facilitating the transfer of nuclear energy for peaceful purposes to countries, particularly third world countries. The IAEA was also charged with establishing a safeguards and physical security regime which would monitor the technology and the facilities and the materials that were transferred to these other countries to ensure that they were never, ever diverted to some military purpose. That's the way the IAEA statute puts it. Okay, that's been in existence since, I think, 1957, approximately. Okay, so there it was, chugging along, mostly, helping backward countries use medical isotopes for, medical purposes and things like that. Okay, well, then in 1970 or something like that, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, went into force. And again, almost everybody that was a member of the IAEA signed on to that treaty. The exceptions were Pakistan, India, Israel, and I think Cuba. I'm not sure about that. Okay, so now we've got a treaty which does a number of things, but one of the things that the treaty does is it promises all of these countries that don't have nuclear weapons access, promises them, assures them of access to all of these nuclear technologies that can only be used for peaceful uses. But the catch was, is they were required, all of these countries, all the signatories were required to place all of this stuff under the IAEA safeguards and physical security regime.
Okay, now let me catch up and let me make sure that I'm on the same page with you here.
Okay.
So beginning back in the Eisenhower years,
right,
when the arms race was just beginning and that kind of thing, there were people that were worried about the spread of nuclear weapons. So what they did was they created this International Atomic Energy Agency, and they got everybody to sign on to it, basically to help spread peaceful uses of nuclear material.
That's right.
But then in order to, when you join up and when you sign up with the IAEA, now you have to let their inspectors come in and make sure that you're using it just for peaceful purposes, you're not turning it into weapons, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so then the Non-Proliferation Treaty comes along, and one of the things, I know it's a long treaty with a lot of different things, but the part that you're emphasizing is the part of the treaty that guarantees access to peaceful technology, right? So how's that different than the agreement was under the IAEA before the NPT was ratified?
There wasn't any agreement, but the, like Bechuanaland, and under the what was its chances of getting the Westinghouse, for example, to come build nuclear reactors in?
Oh, I see. So the NPT sort of mandates the spread of the technology.
It says that those that are able, like the United States and the Soviet Union and places like that, it's an obligation to bring nuclear energy to particularly the third world, but to all of the signatories to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, And they have an inalienable right under the treaty to such technology and materials and things. And let's take Iran, for example. Iran has an inalienable right under the NPT for the Russians to build that reactor at Bushehr. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's guaranteed. The only thing that Iran has to do is to make all of its nuclear facilities subject to an IAEA safeguards agreement. All of them. Everything in the country. Okay. So that's the non-proliferation treaty.
Right.
Now, the non-proliferation treaty has five so-called nuclear weapon states among its membership. Those are the United States, United Kingdom, France, Russia, and China. They already had nuclear weapons and nuclear programs. And so what the treaty does in their case is allows them to decide which of their nuclear facilities, if any, they wish to make subject to an IAEA safeguards agreement, which means the inspectors come in and put up monitors and put seals on things and all that sort of thing.
Right, but the point being there that if the country's already had nuclear weapons, they're part of that, the group of five or whatever.
That's right. That they get to decide.
They get to decide, right.
And, of course, they say, okay. And you know, there are nuclear reactors in this country, power plants in this country, that are safeguarded. Okay?
Okay.
I don't know if there are any in Russia. I'm not familiar with that. But I do know there are in this country. Okay. Now, then that takes care of part of it. But the IAEA is now going to ensure that once this technology gets transferred and gets into a country, like India, for example, which is not a non-proliferation treaty signatory, okay?
So they're a member of the IAEA, but not of the NPT.
That's correct.
Okay.
The IAEA is responsible for seeing that that facility, that nuclear reactor, is safeguarded. However, the IAEA does not have the authority to go moseying around all over the country to see if there are other facilities, which there undoubtedly are, since they've got nuclear weapons, that should be safeguarded. Because they're not members of the NPT, and it's the Non-Proliferation Treaty that requires that all of those nuclear facilities be safeguarded. Okay, then we come to this third part of the triad, and that's the Nuclear Suppliers Group. That organization has now 44 members, and those are the countries in the world that have significant capabilities to supply nuclear things, like reactors or gas centrifuges or various other kinds of things like that. They got together voluntarily. It's not a treaty or anything like that. And they agreed to coordinate their export laws. And what that meant was each country agreed to pass tough export laws on their own citizens, you know.
Right,
like
basically,
the Westinghouse, for example, wants to export a reactor to, say Iran. They have to go get an export license.
Right, and this is basically a way for the intelligence agencies to keep track of nuclear materials that are going around the earth, right?
Agencies, I would essentially say that you ought to be, if you're a responsible member of the community of nations, you ought to at least exercise some control over what gets exported from your country. In particular, for example, let's say bazookas or shoulder-mounted missiles or things like that. Okay, well, the Nuclear Suppliers Group is an organization, not an organization, it's a coalition, I guess you could call it, or anyway, the group agrees to coordinate its export laws, not only in what has to have an export law, I mean, what has to have a law ban on the export, but also criminal penalties for failing to get an export law or to an export permit or to not make a good faith effort to ensure that the people that you're exporting it to are going to use it for the purpose that they say they're going to use it for. Mm-hmm. Or maybe if they're going to be just a middleman to transfer it to some other country, you know. So the Nuclear Suppliers Group was established right after India tested its first nuclear weapon back in 1974. Well, then in the aftermath of what we found, what the IAEA found in Iraq after the Gulf War in 1991, the Nuclear Suppliers Group and the IAEA toughened up their systems.
Well, and that was because they had found in the aftermath of the Gulf War, they had found that Iraq was actually further along on their nuclear program than they had thought, right?
Well, more to the point, Germany and the Netherlands and Switzerland and one or two other countries had failed to properly monitor their exports. Things were being exported.
All right, hold it right there, Gordon. All right, everybody, we're talking with Dr. Gordon Prather. He's got an article called Tearing Up the NPT on antiwar.com right now. To the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm talking with Dr. Gordon Prather. He writes for antiwar.com and also for worldnetdaily.com. And there's big news regarding American technology transfers in India. But before Gordon takes us to school on exactly what's happened in this last week or so, he's, first of all, given us a very detailed background on the International Atomic Energy Agency, the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and the Nuclear Suppliers Group, so that we're all on the same page. And you are, if you've been listening for the last half hour. If not, then you're just going to have to go to antiwar.com and read Dr. Prather's archives and catch up. So where we left off at the commercial break there, sir, was the after the Gulf War, they found that Iraq had a more developed nuclear program than they thought. And then I think you were saying that some of the members of the Nuclear Suppliers Group had been sending things to Iraq and not reporting it to the group.
Yeah, they weren't required to report it, but they hadn't taken due diligence to see that the things that were being exported wound up where they were assumed to be going, or that they were being used for the purpose in which the export license, if it was obtained at all, said they were going to be used. So as a result of what the IAEA found in Iraq after the Gulf War, the Non-Proliferation Treaty wasn't changed. What changed was the guidelines of the Nuclear Suppliers Group, which were tightened up substantially. Not only the guidelines, but the laws in the countries of the members of the Nuclear Suppliers Group were tightened, and the penalties and the laws were enforced, and there were considerable penalties now enforced on their own citizens, their own companies, who attempted to evade or to violate those export laws. Okay, so that's what on the export end, the Nuclear Suppliers Group, among other things, required that in future, all of the things that materials, special nuclear materials, gas centrifuges, reactors, uranium conversion facilities, and all that sort of thing, if they were to export any of those things to a country, that country had to subject all of its facilities, all of them, not just the stuff that was being exported, all of its facilities to the IAEA safeguards and physical security agreement. Okay, now that's no problem for a country like Iran because all of its facilities already were subject to safeguards agreement.
Right.
But it is a problem for a country like India, which by then, of course, had nuclear weapons and tested them. And so that essentially meant that from 1993 or so onward, nobody could export to, none of the nuclear suppliers group could export to India things like refueling for reactors that already existed there that were safeguarded. In particular, there's a reactor, I can't pronounce it, but a Tananapur or something like that. That's a U.S.-built reactor. Well, since 1993 or so, the condition for any of the nuclear supplier group refueling that reactor is that India has subjected its nuclear weapons program to the IAEA safeguards agreement. Okay, so there's only been one refueling since then, and that was done for safety reasons because, you know, the reactor was going to blow up or something like that if somebody didn't send them fuel. So this was a one-time thing, and Russia supplied the fuel for it. Okay, so that's the export end of things. Now let's go to the consequences for the IAEA as a result of what they discovered in Iraq after the Gulf War. They came up with a what they call a model additional protocol. Under the original protocol that all of these countries that were signatories to the NPT, and also India and Pakistan, they were not required to report that they had gotten these materials or facilities until they were actually introduced into the system. That is, you could go out and buy all the centrifuge parts you wanted to make gas centrifuges and assemble them and then test them. And as long as you didn't put uranium in them, uranium hexafluoride in them, you didn't have to tell the IAEA about it. You didn't have to tell them that you'd imported this stuff. You didn't have to tell them that you'd built a facility to house them, any of these kind of things.
But that changed after 1991.
I think it was 94 was when the additional protocol first was, what would you call it? I don't know, codified or anything like that. Okay.
Okay, well, we only got 30 seconds here, Gordon.
Okay, well, in the particular case of Iran, they signed this additional protocol in 2003. And so now they are subject to very stringent IAEA safeguards and physical security regime.
Okay, and when we get back from this break, we're talking with Gordon Prather from antiwar.com. And when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about Iran and then back to India. It's the Weekend Interview Show. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm talking with Dr. Gordon Prather. He's a nuclear physicist, and he's an expert on the international treaties controlling nuclear proliferation on Earth. And let's go ahead and, at this point, Gordon, let's talk about Iran, basically as a setup for what's happened between us and India in the last week. Because Iran, I guess, first of all, their situation is pretty controversial, their relationship with the International Atomic Energy Agency. So maybe you can use them as an example. To what degree are they cooperating with this non-proliferation regime, and how does that compare to the Indians?
Well, Iran, as a signatory to the NPT, already had all of its facilities that it was required to have subject to an IAEA safeguards agreement, subject to such an agreement. The additional protocol, which was developed as a result of the deficiencies in what was required to be submitted as or subject to an IAEA safeguards agreement, which resulted from the IAEA discovering what was going on in Iraq after the Gulf War, led them to develop an additional protocol, which now gave the IAEA the authority to actually examine the imports of, let's say, Iran, the nuclear imports of Iran, to see if whatever the nuclear suppliers group had exported to Iran was actually used for the purpose which the exporter said it was going to be used for and which the importer, the Iranian, said it was going to be used for, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this began at the import level. So from now on, from the time that the Iran signed the additional protocol in 2003, it had to inform the IAEA that it was importing such and such a stuff, and that and the IAEA then would make it subject to the safeguards agreement and follow it from then on.
Okay, so but they didn't sign that until 2003.
Well, nobody. Iran did it before we did.
Right. Well, the point there that I'm highlighting is, I think, don't they always make a big deal that Iran admitted that they were hiding the secret stuff? But if they only signed the additional protocol in 2003, it sounds like they weren't required to say
that
they had it.
Absolutely.
And as soon as they were required to,
they were under no obligation whatsoever to tell the IAEA about this so-called hidden facility that they were building at Natanz, which is still empty. You know, there's still nothing in it. It's just an underground warehouse, practically. Okay. Well, at any rate, but the United States, particularly the Bush administration, but even the Clinton administration, leaned on Russia not to supply the Iranians with a nuclear reactor or finish the nuclear reactor that was being built, or to provide them uranium enrichment equipment. They had the Russians and the Iranians had a deal in the early 90s that the Russians would supply them a uranium enrichment turnkey facility.
But all this American pressure is outside of the non-proliferation regime.
Well, yeah, if anybody's violating the non-proliferation treaty, which it doesn't matter to me whether they do or not, it's the United States and not Iran. You know, it is unquestionably, at least the spirit, the United States has been violating the spirit of the non-proliferation treaty for years.
And this really is the point here, too, right?
Respect Iran.
You're not arguing that the UN ought to be able to come in and do whatever they like with our nuclear facilities, right? You're just pointing out the hypocrisy that here we are using all this international law to beat our enemies over the head, but then when it comes to us, we do whatever we want.
Well, it's a little not okay. Let's go to you're leading up to what just happened last weekend. Up until last weekend, this is now with respect to India. The export guidelines, we're a member of the nuclear suppliers group, and so is Russia, and so is China. The guidelines said that if we were to refuel that reactor that's been operating for, I don't know, 15 years, I guess, in India, the Indians would be required by us, to subject all of their nuclear facilities to an IAEA safeguards agreement.
Right, because that's our agreement with the rest of the members of the nuclear suppliers
that's
group.
That's correct.
Okay, and now, what has Bush done?
And says, you know, you're a member of this group, you can't do that either. If you refuel that reactor again, you've got to demand that the Indians submit all of their, you know.
So now Bush is going to refuel it.
Facilities, everything, the nuclear weapons programs, everything, to an IAEA safeguards agreement.
But now we're doing the exact same thing that we forbid Russia from doing.
No, not quite. Okay, here's what happened this last weekend. President Bush, Prime Minister of India, came to the United States and in an almost unprecedented visit, addressed a joint session of Congress, wherein he said in a joint press conference, he said the following thing. First of all, Bush led off, and he said, let me get the exact quote. He announced that India, as a responsible state with advanced nuclear technology, should acquire the same benefits and advantages as other such states. Now, what such states is he talking about? And what benefits is he talking about? He basically means this. And this is Singh now talking, or however you pronounce that name. It's S-I-N-G-H. He's the Prime Minister of India. He announced that they were prepared to assume the same responsibilities and practices of, let's say, the United States. These responsibilities and practices consist of identifying and separating civilian and military nuclear facilities and programs, and taking a decision to place voluntarily its civilian nuclear facilities under IAEA safeguards, signing and adhering to an additional protocol with respect to the civilian nuclear facilities, continuing India's withdrawal moratorium on nuclear unilateral moratorium on nuclear testing, and you know, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so what Finch has done, essentially, and Bush says that he's going to change the U.S. law and to change the U.S. The Nuclear Spires Group guidelines so that essentially India will have the same status that we do with respect to nuclear proliferation. Namely, we will the Indians will decide which of their facilities they consider to be civilian and which are military. And then they will tell the IAEA, okay, we're going to put these facilities, but not all the other facilities. So it makes them subject to a additional protocol to the IAEA subcommittee. In other words, Bush has essentially made India the sixth nuclear weapon state in the Non-Proliferation Treaty without the Indians having to even sign the nuclear non-proliferation treaty. You know, it's mind-boggling.
And they're not even going to have to either.
That's right. They won't. And I'm, you know. And so what is that going to do to the non-proliferation treaty? Well, among other things, I would expect an awful lot of countries are just going to say, to hell with this. We're not getting anything out of this. The only thing that we were getting out of the treaty before was the promise that the nuclear weapon states that were signatories to the Non-Proliferation Treaty were eventually going to get rid of all their nuclear weapons. Well, India is not making any such statement or promise.
Right, and where we didn't mean it.
Well, I don't know. I think we certainly have, we and the Russians have certainly substantially reduced the number of nuclear weapons in our stockpile. But, you know, that made good sense. They're expensive to maintain, and they're not, you know, the war and the Fulda Gap in Central Europe didn't take place.
Right.
All of the thousands of nuclear weapons that both sides built for that weapon, for that war, aren't needed. Okay, so now that there are two other things, I don't know how much more time we've got.
Oh, we got 20 minutes.
About Gordon. This, they're interesting.
We've got 20 minutes, so go right ahead.
Well, there are three nuclear weapon states. That is, three states that are not signatories to the Non-Proliferation Treaty that are known or almost certainly known to have nuclear weapons. Those are Pakistan, India, and Israel. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Those are basically the only states that are outside, if you discount North Korea. Those are the only three states that are not signatories to the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and all three of them have nuclear weapons. Okay, now we've just done this with respect to India. We've essentially made India a sixth nuclear weapon state as defined by the Non-Proliferation Treaty without requiring them to join the Non-Proliferation Treaty,
mm-hmm.
and to be subject to some of the other restrictions that are in the treaty. Well, next week, what's to stop it? If Bush gets away with this without too much flap, and it looks like that's what's happening, well, Pakistan, a few weeks from now, they'll get the same treatment. And when's Israel going to get the treatment? See, right now, U.S. law prohibits our sending all kinds of things to these three countries, and all kinds of weapons and other kinds of things that are all based upon their either not being a signatory to the NPT or having tested nuclear weapons. And those laws are going to have to be changed, and I don't know whether or not Congress will do that or not. It's hard to. There hasn't been much flap up there in Congress. The UK, Britain, has announced that they are not going to regard India the way that Bush just got through saying, and they're going to continue to comply with, they're a member of the Nuclear Suppliers Group, and they're going to continue to apply by the guidelines.
It's funny that Bush is supposed to be the anti-proliferation president, right? Isn't that the whole thing about the war on terrorism? Is it's not just a hunt for individual killers, but it's the race to stop them from obtaining weapons of mass destruction. Right?
Well, I'll tell you, Scott, what it basically seems to come down to is as follows. Now that the Cold War is over, it's not so much a concern that a nation state will get nuclear weapons, or as it is that they might then provide them directly or indirectly to terrorists. And so that, I think, is what is the reason that we haven't heard more of a hue and cry, because I don't think anybody supposes that at the present time that India would likely provide nuclear weapons to terrorists.
Right.
And I don't suppose, unless you consider some of the Israelis terrorists themselves, which they at one time were, I don't think anyone really supposes that Israel might do that. But we certainly suppose that North Korea will, and that Pakistan might. The only reason that Pakistan is such buddy-roo with us right now is this General Musharraf is the dictator of Pakistan.
Right, they've already tried to kill him about four times.
I know, it's more than that. I don't know what it's up to now, but the last count I heard was eight serious attempts.
Well, and you know, that is serious, because if he's out of the picture, then the future of Pakistan is completely up in the air. I mean, whoever seizes power after him is a crapshoot, really.
Yeah, and he says, I don't know whether it's true or not, that he will never allow, even Musharraf says he will never allow U.S. forces on Pakistani soil. I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's what he says.
So there's really a serious chilling effect here with what we're doing, undermining these treaties.
Well, I wonder what conversations are going over in the Kremlin now in Moscow about all this. Here, for at least 5 years, the United States, under Clinton and Bush, has prevented the Russians from building the other four reactors that they had contracted to build in India. They built two. I don't know if they're all, either the second one's completed yet. But anyway, they've already built two, and they intended to build four more. Same thing in Iran. And each time we've cited the proliferation, the possible proliferation of nuclear weapons to terrorists as our reason for blocking or prohibiting those sales. But Putin himself has said, look, man, there's a limited market for nuclear reactors, nuclear power, and things of that nature in the world. And Iran and India are significant parts of that. And here you are preventing us from exporting one of our biggest dollar-earning products, namely nuclear power plants.
Right.
How can you do that? And then all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, without any warning, reverse course totally with respect to India and say, well, we're going to supply them reactors and we're going to supply them with fuel and we're just going to flout the nuclear supplier group guidelines. I don't know.
What's funny is when the backlash from this, when Russia starts supplying even more stuff to Iran, everyone will forget about what you've said here today. And all we'll know is, those Russians are in it with the Iranians.
Well, the Russians won't forget it. Maybe people in this country will forget it, but the Russians won't forget it. The Chinese won't forget it. The European Union won't forget it. I mean, after all, we're essentially blocking the European Union from supplying reactors and uranium enrichment stuff to Iran, which would be perfectly legal. In fact, the Non-Proliferation Treaty essentially... Well, it more than encourages, it almost requires those that have nuclear capabilities, not nuclear weapons, but peaceful nuclear capabilities, to share those. They're the common benefit of all mankind, you know?
Right.
If Becca Wanaland wants a nuclear power plant, the Non-Proliferation Treaty essentially says, okay, you can have it. And the Import-Export Bank and the World Bank and all these other people, you know, will help you. And we'll have experts on the ground to make sure that the thing is operated safely and all that sort of thing. That's why most of these countries originally joined the Non-Proliferation Treaty. Now, after what happened to what we discovered in Iraq, then most of the people who signed on to make the Non-Proliferation Treaty indefinite in extent, before that it had to be renewed every 5 years. Since 1995, it's indefinite. And the reason given by most of the countries who did that, who voted to make it indefinite, is that we promised that we'd get rid of our nuclear weapons. All five of the weapon states.
Things don't seem to be as easy as they used to be. It's getting harder every day. The things are better things to say about what's going on around you and what's happening inside you. When it's time to change, you won't know how. It's what matters.
All right, my friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Dr. Gordon Prather. He writes for WorldNet Daily and for antiwar.com. And, you know, one of the interesting ironies about what we're discussing here today, Dr. Prather, is this poor country, Iran, that has been doing everything possible to cooperate with the IAEA, flinging their doors wide open, signing every additional protocol to their safeguards agreement that's shoved under their nose, that right now the U.S. military, according to the American conservative magazine, as quoted at justinlogan.com, they're drawing up plans for a full-scale assault on Iran, including using nuclear weapons to strike their deep underground bunkers. And these are deep underground bunkers that, according to you, are empty.
Well, I don't know about these bunkers that they think are there, but the facility at Natanz, journalists and legislators and all kinds of people have been taken on tours of that place in the last, this year, since the first of the year, and they report that it is an empty shell. It's an empty building. Now, it is designed, perhaps, to house as many as 50,000 gas centrifuge plant, facilities, entities, but there ain't nothing in it now. Not a now, but anyway. And it's underground, or partially underground, mostly underground. Okay, well, and sort of in closing, you might ask, why in the world would the Bush administration do what they've just done?
I might ask that.
It boggles the mind. Well, the best guess is that it's part of a Bush administration policy to contain China, believe it or not. And so we've just signed a military alliance with India, and this is one of the carrots that we've given them for signing that alliance, and we are also going to provide them all kinds of things like advanced fighters and bombers and missiles and everything else under the sun. But again, you know, is it worth it? I mean, to what extent can India prevent China from annexing Taiwan? You know, I mean.
Yeah, or would they? They don't have any motive to do that at all.
Well, I don't know, but the question is, what means do they have? What can they do other than the fact that they've
sure.
got a billion people?
Well, wasn't there also news in the last few weeks about India moving closer to Russia and China?
Oh, I think that's true.
And this sort of smacks of desperation to me.
And Iran, too, for that matter. That we've done everything we can to prevent the Iranians from building a natural gas pipeline. Iran is the second largest supplier of natural gas on the planet, and they are going to build a pipeline from Iran through Afghanistan, through Pakistan, to India. And they're going to supply natural gas to Pakistan and India.
So here we are pushing all our enemies together and then in desperation freaking out trying to win them back after it's too late.
Well, it's different now. And energy needs of China and India are, in my opinion, are what driving are driving the train. And they're going to build lots of nuclear power plants. They're going to build lots of gas, natural gas, and methanol and other kinds of energy transfer terminals and things of that nature. And so, I don't know, it's just some people that are Cold War warriors that won't give up, who've now decided, okay, now it's Russia, China,
right,
that we got to send.
All right, we're all out of time, Gordon.
They ended up by saying, I'm very concerned about what this will do. I think it'll put an end to our efforts to stifle Iran.